Russell Banks, the acclaimed author of 17 works of fiction, including Continental Drift and The Sweet Hereafter, splits his year between homes in upstate New York and Florida. While at his Miami home, Russell became aware of a morally complex situation he explores brilliantly in his new novel, Lost Memory of Skin. I'm very excited to have him with us today to speak about his new work. Welcome, Russell. It's such an honor to have you speaking with us today.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, okay. I have to ask first thing, The Lost Memory of Skin. Why and how did you choose this title? What does it refer to?
Yeah, it's a good question, I think, because it is a title that doesn't simply name the character. It names a plight, a condition, I guess, a context. And I'm trying to point toward the digitalization of our lives, and especially of our lives where we contact, communicate with, and connect with each other. You know, right at the skin, and I guess it has a lot, therefore, to do with the internet and also with the digitalization of the erotic, and therefore has something to do with points to pornography and the sense that we're surrounded by it and that it's displaced human sensual and erotic connection. So that's sort of my initial understanding of it, because I had the title well before I got into the book. I was carrying that around in my head it's in my notebook before I even began to write, I see. And actually, I can tell you a little story about how I came to it. I was in France about 4 years ago, and I knew I was going to be working with the story would be dealing with convicted sex offenders living under the causeway and homeless and also people who got there through the internet and pornography and so on. I knew I was going to deal with these kinds of really taboo subjects and all. And I was sitting at a little cafe in Paris and a van went by and in French it said, Memory of Lost Skin, and it was a soap opera or something in Paris and France at the time. And I thought, that could be a really interesting title, and just flipped the lost around so that it was Lost Memory of Skin. And wrote it down in my notebook, and then later realized I had the title from the start.
Well, I'm going to jump ahead in my list of questions, because there's one thing I did want to ask you. There was one line in the book, kind of early on in the book, and you say, sometimes it's hard to distinguish between love and lifelong dependency. That really struck me. Is that kind of, you know, philosophy something that you sort of have a concept rolling around in your head and then you find the place for it? Or did a line like that just flow into the story?
Well, I like that. It came out of the story and out of the experience and mentality of the kid. And it's in reference to his relationship to his mother. He's trying to decide, do I really love my mother or do I not? And I knew that's where I was. And so he's reasoning his way toward making a distinction between dependency and love. And his mother, he's troubled because his mother doesn't make that distinction. Because she recognizes he's dependent on her, she thinks that he must love her, and because she's taking care of him in this rather minimal way, she thinks that she loves him. But he's making a more refined and subtle and nuanced distinction between these things and in his way toward understanding what love really is. I know what your question is. I haven't quite answered it. But I didn't carry that around with me as a little maxim or something, or taped it over my computer somewhere. So I was trying to place it, insert it like a raisin into a cake or something. It just grew out of the material itself that I was working with.
Oh, all right. Well,
that's how most of the entire text, you know. It'll suddenly appear, you know, like a natural and necessary part of the text.
All right. Well, back to the main character, the kid, who is described as a virginal 22-year-old sex offender on parole who lives by necessity in a colony of offenders on the causeway. What drew you to this interest in this story of this real-life situation here in Miami?
Yeah, well, the fact that I... I lived down there 6 months a year on over on the South Beach on the Bayside, and my condo is just north of Lincoln Road, and I can look out across the bay and see the Tuttle Causeway. And you know, about 4 years ago, started reading occasional pieces in the Herald about this colony of men, and I was just struck by that. And I could look out and just start to wonder what on earth is going on, and what kind of life are these people forced to live, and why, and how, and the fact that, you know, these are the unintended consequences of good intentions, you know, kind of the terrible and sad irony of that struck me. So I would never have, you know, set out to write a novel about that unless I was sort of, it was so proximate to me, it was so close to me. And that's what really drew me to it. And then I started poking my nose around and started doing a little research on sex offending, on the legal ramifications of it, on the psychology of it, from the various degrees and kinds of what we call sex offending. And you know, it just kind of grew like Topsy, and before I knew it, I had a mass of material that I thought, you know, this is really going to make a novel. I mean, there's enough here that we all are, if we're not thinking about it, we probably ought to be thinking about it, because it's facing us, and not just in Miami, but all across the country.
Well, have you seen any progress or hope for change in the way with our society deals with these people?
No, I don't see much. In fact, I'm here in Seattle as we're speaking here, and I just spoke with a man who said here in Washington State they just passed legislation which is designed to keep sex offenders on a permanent parole, as it were, long after they have served their time, paid their debt to society, as it were, and met all the conditions of their conviction, and so on, and which is essentially making a lifetime punishment, making them into lifetime criminals, criminalizing for the rest of their lives. So, in a way, it's worsening, as that kind of legislation is being put forward all across the country in many states, and it does, I don't see that we're beginning yet to think in a more a more subtle and a more realistic way about this, and examining, you know, it, both from a legal point of view, but also from a sociological and psychological point of view, say what's really going on here. No, not what are we afraid of, but what's really going on, and why are we afraid? Yeah. Looking at it from that point of view. I mean, I'm a novelist too. I'm not a politician or a sociologist or academic, and so my job is really just to raise questions and to provoke those kinds of inquiries, and hope that, you know, in doing that, maybe then change will begin to occur, at least on the edges of things, because it only occurs, you know, really one reader at a time, and that's all I can hope for.
Well, do you find it more difficult to write about someone who is so flawed, like the kid, not a sex offender, but just truly flawed, versus a character who seems, quote, more normal?
Yeah. Well, I really find it necessary, and finally, in the end, I suppose, easier for me, as much as I don't, I'm following my instincts, to write about people who are very different from me, who are mysterious to me, and at least at the beginning, unknowable, and to me personally, and so that's been the habit of mind and the nature of my imagination since I was a very young writer. Is I'm not interested in writing about myself or even about people like me. I'm really interested in trying to understand people who are different from me. Mm. So I've written about, you know, Africans and Haitians and women and poor people, people without any privilege that I have or power that I carry around. People who most of us tend to ignore, or who are invisible or unheard in our daily lives. And so, but the reason being is not that I'm on a mission or that I have an ideology about that. It's just that I they're mysterious to me. They're unknown to me, and the only way I can begin to understand them is by getting close to them through the process of fiction, through telling stories and looking at the world through their eyes, in a sense inhabiting these characters.
Well, the other key character in the book is the professor, described as a man of enormous size and intellect. How did you decide to wrap the story about these two very different kinds of men?
Yeah, well, the professor appears in the story because I needed to have kind of an outsider's point of view. I couldn't tell the story entirely from the kid's point of view without it becoming, frankly, the kid's incapable of telling his own story. That's one of the points of the narrative, is that certainly in the beginning he doesn't have a narrative of his own. He can't link the various events of his life together into a coherent story. I needed a character who could come in and evoke that from him, and the professor with his tape recorder and film and camera, who is studying homeless convicted sex offenders and the relationship between homelessness and the convicted sex offending. I just needed him on a strategic level. And then when I brought him in, I thought, well, there are various kinds of addictions. The kid may be addicted to pornography, or he's addicted to the internet. Well, you know, it's not unlike someone who's addicted to food, who's, you know, weighs a quarter ton, and when he opens his refrigerator, the parts of his brain that go off and light up are the same as the parts in the kid's brain that go off and light up when he clicks his way onto a porn site.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I know you're on a very, very busy book tour, but are you already working on your next project?
I know what I'm doing next, and I've got my eye on it. And I get through with this book tour at the end of October. I'm going to settle down with my wife and my two dogs over there in South Beach and go to work and not come out and not talk to anybody until I get it done.
Russell, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy, busy schedule to speak with us today. The book is really powerful.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, Elaine. Bye. Okay, Elaine. Bye. Okay, Elaine.